coming back
for everything.
You got into Harvard Law?
What, like it's hard?
Scarface on repeat. Scarface on repeat. Constant, y'all.
Catch a painted pony on the spinning wheel ride.
Some people are saying that your new music sounds a lot like Bob Dylan.
Well, maybe Bob Dylan sounds a lot like me.
She doesn't even go here. They knew, and they let it happen.
Oh, and in case I don't see you.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Hello. Just adjusting my headsets. 94.9 Radio Western. You are tuned into Outside the Frame, London's only movie talk show. I'm glad that you checked it this time because we've been having some technical difficulties with your mic recently. My name's Elijah.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Mike.
I'm Sam.
Let's go.
And we are once again Outside the Frame, London's only movie talk show. We talk about film and the culture that surrounds it.
The band's back together.
The whole band
for
is
the last time.
For the last time, unfortunately.
For the actual last time.
For legitimately the last time.
For legal reasons.
For legal.
Yeah. For legal reasons.
Someone's going to be beheaded, I think, is the.
I think that is what I was told anyway.
Yeah.
And.
Whoa, what is happening?
Oh my God. What is this?
It might be for the last time.
Okay.
We're in Tron right now.
Whoa, what just happened there?
I don't know. Okay, I'm going to try that one more
time. Try it again.
Whoa.
It does it to all of our voices.
Nice, whoa. Dude. What setting is
what
this?
What is going on? I don't know. I'm just going to turn that off.
What?
I don't know.
We're figuring it out here on the 400th episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, to everybody who's wondering why we said this is the last time, it's because, you know, we have somebody who's...
Oh, there it is. Oh, my God.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, no.
We have someone who's leaving us today.
Yeah, forever.
Forever.
Like,
Ryan.
Literally forever.
Ryan Goodison.
Hi, that's me.
He decided to get a job at one of our competitors. One of our harshest competition people, organizations out there.
Yeah.
Who we've had ongoing feuds and beef with for so long that they had to poach Ryan from us over at Post Media. I'm very happy for you. But,
yeah,
we're very happy for you. But we are going to miss you.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the last time we're going to see you in
so,
the year.
Get the F out, and we're going to do this episode now. That was your moment.
Enough of the sad music. Yeah. You don't get that anymore. But congratulations, Ryan.
Yeah, it is my last week here, which is sad.
Sad.
I didn't know it was going to happen as soon as it did, but excited and nervous about the future. But perhaps some of the listeners will see my name in their London Free Press subscriptions in the future.
Yes, dude. You might see me
around.
Not on their Apple podcast and Spotify, where we are streaming now, Outside the Frame. You can catch us on wherever you get podcasts.
Just so Radio Western listeners know, I haven't even posted this on my LinkedIn yet. So
you guys are
getting the scoop.
This is the scoop, dude.
This really is the scoop.
Yeah. Getting a full-on exclusive. You can, if you wanted to, take part in our conversation as well for Ryan's last show.
And
text
say goodbye to Ryan with us.
Yeah, please. Yeah. 519-661-3600. That is 519-661-3600. I think that's about it for housekeeping that we have to do. Oh, no, actually.
No.
There was a big announcement on behalf of Highland Cinema, on behalf of Radio Western.
Yes.
And on behalf of The Holy Diver.
Yeah. Bum, bum, bum.
And that is the second edition of Movie Trivia Night hosted by Outside the Frame.
And Ryan.
I can technically be there.
Ryan
so
will
be
there
for
host.
That.
It is October 21st, so it's in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
2 weeks today.
2 weeks today. So get your thinking caps on. There's going to be a lot of horror movie categories.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Holy Diver. At Holy Diver, that's where it's being hosted.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be tons of prizes. The first one was unbelievable. So many people came out. It was crazy. We had a blast.
Yeah.
And Holy Diver, everyone at Diver was so thrilled with the turnout. And, you know, it was just a great vibe overall. As I was saying to Tyson, one of the managers there, I said one of our ex-members / members, Sam, who's on the phone right now. Hi, Sam.
Hey.
Is one of the biggest trivia people that I know. And she definitely always brought the trivia games to the show and everything. Unfortunately, I had to have the idea after she left the show. That wasn't purposeful, by the way. It's just that's when I had the idea. Like, you know, I saw a couple things online and I was like, I think we could replicate this in London in our way and do a trifecta and do a trivia night and kind of, you know, fill a little void, I think. And it obviously, you know, people responded, but unfortunately Sam's not there to participate in what I know she would be super pumped about participating in.
Yes.
You know.
But all three of us, gentlemen, will be there.
Yeah. Outside the frame and Ryan.
Yes. Outside the frame plus Ryan Goodison will be there.
Outside the frame
feet.
Plus
can you do a feat like so it's like
featuring Ryan Goodison of post media fame will be at movie trivia night.
Featuring Ryan Goodison as an independent body.
Yeah. In parentheses, as an independent human being not representing anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get the legal team behind it.
We'll get the lawyers on
it. Yeah. But that is 2 weeks from now, October 21st at the Holy Diver at the corner of King and Talbot.
It's going to be a good time.
It's going to be a great time. We're up in our game from September's own, and that was already a blast. So,
can I also point out that in 3 days at the Highland Cinema is the second edition of the Friday night horror films that we're doing.
You certainly can.
We are doing Poltergeist.
Banger.
So good. And we're following that up with the 40th anniversary of Reanimator, which is presented on 35mm and sponsored by House Craft Burgers here in London. So it is going to be a blast. There's going to be giveaways. There's going to be lots of fun pre-shows. It's going to be a blasty blast.
Yep.
So come out on Friday. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Come out to these events. They're doing two. Highland is doing two really, really great horror movies back to back every Friday this month.
Yeah.
And who knows? Maybe some of those movies are going to end up in the categories for trivia.
Oh, they will.
They certainly will. Oh, 100%, I know.
100% will.
Spoiler alert. But yes, they certainly will. We won't tell you where, but they will end up there.
Yeah.
With that being said.
Yeah. What are we doing today?
Today is part three of our ongoing series of the top 25 films of the past 25 years.
I raise a question?
Sure.
Do we have to abide by Ryan's picks now? Like ooh. do we remove him from the thing and then redo the top 10?
I was saying I don't want to spoil anything, but I was saying that it is funny that it's just we're gonna name the one we're all thinking of. Yeah. We're gonna name it, and it's just gonna be everyone going.
So I was telling him I was gonna deliver him a dossier he could read.
Yeah,
you can read on the air.
I'll do my best Ryan Goodison impression.
So is this? So are we allowed? So because I guess we don't say his name, but because it is our picks as a group.
Yes,
as the four of us, and Ryan actually did a lot of the dirty work to get all the averages and all.
I
that
used
stuff.
A mathematical formula.
Yeah,
I
sure did.
Yeah, you did.
Yep.
And so now I think we should take him out of the top 10 and redo the
what
top
the
10.
Hell, guys? What the hell?
That's a conversation that we can have off the air.
That's a legal question, I guess. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
We'll get Ryan out of here. It'll just be you, me, and Sam to talk about it, and then we'll go from there.
Hey, but we're doing part three today.
We are doing part three. So before we get to the top 10, we have to get through number 15 to 11 today. And we've got some fun. We've got some fun picks.
Oh yeah, there's
some very interesting picks.
We're getting into the meat of it now.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So let's not waste any more time because there is going to be a lot of discussions to be had about some of these films.
Yeah.
So, without further ado, does anyone have anything to say before we get into our number 15 pick for the top 25 films of the past 25 years?
How you doing, Sam? Are you hanging in or what?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm pumped. I'm pumped.
Hell yeah! You've got all your notes ready?
No.
That's perfect. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. For our number 15 pick, we have none other than the 2016 Denis Villeneuve film Arrival.
How do they communicate? Here, Louise is putting us all to shame. The first breakthrough was to discover that there's no correlation between what a heptapod says and what a heptapod writes. Unlike all written human languages, their writing is semisiographic. It conveys meaning. It doesn't represent sound. Perhaps they view our form of writing as a wasted opportunity, passing up a second communications channel.
Arrival was directed by Denis Villeneuve. It was written Canada's own Denis Villeneuve.
Back when he was doing original films and not franchises.
Damn straight. Yeah. Right before he kicked that off. This was written by Eric Heiserer, and it was adapted from the novella The Story of You by Ted Chiang. This stars Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner, Forest Whitaker, Michael Stuhlbarg, Zima, and it's about a linguist named Louise Banks, who leads a team of investigators when spaceships mysteriously appear on Earth. Her and her crew must find a way to communicate with the extraterrestrial visitors before nations begin to wage a war on the unknown species. This movie won one Oscar for sound editing, was nominated for 7 others, including Best Picture, notably not Best Actress. We'll get into that in a second. This movie made $100 million domestically and $212 million worldwide.
Yeah.
Why is this movie on our top...
I mean, this I know for me, this is one that I was pushing.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I know that there's other fans of this movie on this on this radio show. However, I really felt like this movie is one of the best science fiction movies that has come out in the last 25 years. It's not doing anything from a bigger concept that is like, oh, brand new. It's not. Like
it's not totally, reinventing the wheel by any means. Yeah.
It's more so the way the story is told and how it's told.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely taking its cues from things like Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yes.
But it's updating it in a really interesting way. And the linguistic part of this movie is so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that language can connect not only humans, but humans to other species, I think it's just a fascinating science fiction film that does something that is interesting, and it's not like, again, it's not reinventing the wheel, but it's definitely showing you like a piece of science fiction, the way of telling a science fiction story, just in a kind of, it's almost like a slice of life type situation where it's like,
yeah,
it's a smaller piece of it. It's like, what if instead of all these big giant ideas of, you know, the planet wars and all that, what if it was like, how do we just communicate?
Yes. Right? And you know what? I'm glad that you mentioned that, because, you know, this movie, it's in my Letterboxd top 4. And the very first episode that we did of Outside the Frame, we talked about putting movies into a time capsule. I chose Arrival.
You did.
Because of the very fact of what you just said.
Yeah.
It teaches us, and it's a very important movie that details communication and empathy in a way that I think is just masterfully done. I think that especially, you know, the what was going on in the world in 2016, the latter half of 2016, you could argue we started to see a failure, if it hadn't already happened, but we were starting to see a failure in communication and empathy in the face of the unknown.
What we have here is a failure to communicate.
Quite literally.
It was more so the chasm between different sides just started getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
And excuse me, you can draw a bunch of different bigger ideas from this film, but that's definitely one of them, is like the idea of if you're actually talking to a person face to face, that empathy can be created.
Mm-hmm.
And that's through language and through
understanding
and not just it, for example, online, which is like creates this like sort of distance, and
which happens in this very movie.
Yes, it does. And I think what you're saying is perfect, and it honestly is, you know, definitely one of the best science fiction films in my
Agreed.
Opinion to come out. I'm surprised it wasn't on more people's lists for best films of the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very happy that it made our list and it made it this far, because I honestly think it's an absolutely masterful film, and it's interesting too. We can get into the actor's piece, but to me, it's like, yes, Amy Adams is great in this movie, but you could sub her out with like 20 other actors.
Sure.
Same with Jeremy Renner.
Sure.
I'm not saying they're bad.
No,
are bad. I'm just saying that like it's not about them.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. It's bigger than the actors, and it's bigger than the performances.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of something that's almost wonderful about the movie, because I feel like the main character is kind of, outside of the fact that she's really smart, she's just a simpleton. She's just regular person.
Yeah,
she
is. And like this ginormous concept is just put in her hand.
Yes.
And it's like, what does she do with it? And I think that you like makes it so much more human.
Absolutely.
Well, that's the beauty of it, right?
Like, yeah, exactly. The fact that she is just like any other person.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. It's
I mean,
a great
it's,
point.
It's a very human story told in a very science fiction way.
Yeah.
And it's a story that everyone can relate to because ultimately language, how you speak, how you think, or just basically how you speak to one another, how you communicate with one another, ultimately affects the way in which you think about things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sam, mm-hmm. I know that you're a fan of a good twist in a movie. And this movie has quite an interesting twist, as kind of similar to what you were saying earlier, Mike. It's not so much like a plot device twist as it is a narrative twist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when you watch it back, obviously, however many times, but especially after the first watch, and you get to see the entire movie through a completely different lens. One of my favorite examples of a plot twist. Sam, did you when you first saw this movie and you saw the plot twist, was this one that shot up into your like canon of favorite ones? Or
oh my gosh, yeah, I think it's so cool. Like this, like the whole memories thing being not really memories. I thought that was like the coolest thing ever, and I also think like it starts out and it's her quote unquote memories. Mm-hmm. And you start with the perspective of death when you're watching them.
That's right.
And as the movie moves forward, your perspective on those exact same memories, which is, and it's like sort of an acceptance of death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. I can see that.
Yeah, and I think that's really a cool way of looking at it. And like that's her decision to accept life and also death at the same time. And mm-hmm. Isn't there a quote that's like the acceptance of death is the acceptance of life or acceptance of whatever.
Could be a Sam quote.
It's vaguely existential.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't know what quote, but yeah, no, I think that whole thing is really cool. And I love like the whole death theme, but like death being not an awful thing.
Yes, I think that's a great point. And I, the other thing I'll add to that is maybe if you had your notes, you would have had that quote right.
Low blow.
See, this is a little bit of extra information as we break from the more serious nature of this movie is that Sam had a bunch of notes and then doesn't have them anymore. So that's mm-hmm. why we're just throwing a couple of digs her way.
Spent a lot of time doing some research for these movies and then lost all of her notes.
Yeah.
Wait, this is the first time I'm hearing of this. What happened?
Oh, yeah. It was when she FaceTimed me earlier.
Well, my phone keeps crashing and then I just updated it. So,
You lost the notes, eh?
Lost the note.
That's tough.
Yeah, well, why don't you, take notes on a laptop instead of your phone? Like, what are we doing here?
Or on paper. Or on paper. You could just...
Paper is... That'll work every single time.
This will never happen again.
I don't believe you.
This is our Denis Villeneuve pick.
Yes.
I think there were two other movies that I personally think could have made the list.
Prisoners was up there.
Yeah. I would personally say Incendie as well, but I know, I also do know that that one is like...
I mean, a lot of people had Dune or Dune Part 2 on their personal list too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that just wouldn't stand for me.
More of a Blade Runner guy.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair.
The guy doesn't... I mean, I throw shade on him, but like with some of his more recent choices. But he doesn't make a bad movie. I'm not saying Dune is bad. That's not what I'm saying.
But
it's just like... I guess, I mean, I've talked about it on the show before. It's just like when you have things like Arrival and like Prisoners and on Incendie, it's like, dude...
Sicario.
Why can't we do this? Why can't we keep doing this?
It's a crazy run.
Arrival made $200 million. It's fine.
Yeah, he would have been great.
You could just keep doing that.
Oh,
you know?
I'm right there with you.
Also, Enemy somewhere in there too.
Enemy.
I love that movie. That's a fun movie. I'm not gonna get too off on it, but that's my frustration.
I will say that when I heard that
he was directing Bond, I was first happy and then immediately sad
because
now how
that,
many is he
my steak is too juicy and my lobster's too buttery. The thing is that
when it comes to that stuff, it's the time that is being removed from that.
Yes.
So it's like because you know it's going to be Bond and then Dune 3. Like, they've already announced, like,
no,
Dune 3 and then Bond.
Yeah.
So that means we have to wait another, what, 4 years to potentially get another Denis film that isn't a franchise
We're
IP?
Probably looking at even more. You know? Dune comes out next year, and then we probably got another 3 years until Bond comes out.
Right. So that's, well, that's like, 4 years plus the time to make another movie.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I don't, like, that's
And that's if
I
he doesn't make a Bond sequel, you
right.
know. Like,
and
so
I don't want that, you know, because we just have lost, like, you know, all these potentially amazing films, you know, that aren't. And again, I'm not throwing like saying that Dune is bad or Dune Part Two is bad or Blade Runner 2049 is bad,
yeah.
or that the Bond movies. I mean, like, I'm sure it'll be great. Like,
as long as they don't cast
he's a great
Tom
director.
Holland.
Yeah, I mean, that like it'll be awesome. You know, yeah. But, no Tom Holland. Let's get off that.
We're okay with that.
Didn't you meet Denis?
Pardon? Oh, I saw him in person. Yeah.
CinemaCon, right?
Yeah. Show Canada last year.
Sorry.
Is he tall?
He didn't seem it. He was being mobbed by so many people.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
I was close, but I didn't wait the amount of time to meet him.
You didn't have a chance to like scan him.
Yeah, I just was like, I saw him very close by, and in terms of the amount of people that were around, and I was like, that's sweet.
And you said,
and
hey.
I was very pumped about that.
You shouted, hey, listen to Outside the Frame.
Yeah.
Tuesdays at 6.
Do you think
that this is an odd side thought, by the way? Sure. I don't want us to get sidetracked. Do you think him and Yorgos get confused?
No.
With each other?
No, like people confuse them in Hollywood for each other.
One's French and one is Greek. Yeah, I don't know, but they
kind of look similar, don't they?
Kind of, yeah.
I guess if you squint a little bit.
Yeah, maybe.
They're both dudes with beards, I guess.
Listen.
Bald dudes with beards.
This is a movie about aliens.
Yeah.
Our next movie is about robots. And this movie rules.
This
movie rules. Our number 14 pick goes to WALL-E.
Name? WALL-E.
WALL-E.
Oh, Eve.
WALL-E was directed and co-written by Andrew Stanton. Also co-written by Pete Docter, who would later go on to direct and co-write films such as Soul and Inside Out.
Nice.
And Up.
Nice. Soul is amazing.
An incredible movie. Super underlooked because of the pandemic Disney Plus release.
Yeah.
Also co-written by Jim Reardon. This movie stars Ben Burtt, Alyssa Knight, Fred Willard, Jeff Carlin, Sigourney Weaver, Jeff Ratzenberger, and more. It's about a robot named WALL-E.
Yep.
Whose directive is to clean the tons of waste and garbage on a future version of Earth. As he falls in love with a visiting robot named Eve, when Eve's mission on Earth is completed, he follows her into space for a journey that will change the fate of humanity. This movie made $223 million domestically, $527 worldwide.
So sick.
Of course, because it's a Pixar movie and a great one at that.
Money.
It won one Oscar for Best Animated Feature and was nominated for 5 others, including Original Screenplay.
Nice.
Mike.
Yeah.
Why is this movie number 14 on our top 25 list?
Well, of course, we wanted to do some kind of animation, Pixar, Disney, something, because, and we had a bunch to choose from. I think for all of us, probably in one way or the other, like from a filmmaking standpoint, from a storytelling standpoint, this is like one of the best, not just animated movies, but clearly one of the best movies of the 21st century or the last 25 years. I think it's also still super relevant in terms of a lot of its themes. Maybe a little like controversial, I guess you could say, in some way.
Somehow it's becoming more controversial
as time goes on, which is kind of interesting. I guess the way that I would look at it is more so because you could look at it from a body standpoint, and that's fine.
Sure.
Like where things, like where the human race is and what WALL-E's kind of doing. I don't necessarily like that is a consequence to what's happening. Not like I don't think they're the movie's not making some sort of commentary on like people's the way people look.
No.
Right? Oh, okay. Yeah. No.
Because that's one of the, I guess, things like that you could bring up with this movie is that, you know, it's like, oh, the human race is bad because they're overweight.
Yeah, everyone's right? quite large in the few. Right. But it's
that's not what the movie's interested in. It's again, it's a consequence for like the for what the humans aren't doing. And they've gotten
that's right.
They've gotten to a point where they're not doing human things anymore. Essentially,
they're
too reliant on everything else. And the way that they look in sort of the way that they act are consequences of those things. So
that's right.
I just think it's such an interesting, like, the more that we become reliant on technology and you know, the way that I just think it's such a relevant film. As it was in, oh, it was probably ahead of its curve in a lot of ways. I think also, like, we were just speaking about it while the clip was playing, but like the fact that this movie is like for the first like 40 minutes has like no talking in it.
It's almost it's borderline a silent film.
It's a silent movie.
Yeah.
And it's when I saw this film, I was in film school when I saw this. I was like, this might be one of the greatest films I've ever seen. And I didn't really want to see it. I saw it because my partner at the time was big into Pixar movies and Disney movies and stuff. And this was just the next one. Mm-hmm. So the guy that did this movie also directed a tiny little movie called Finding Nemo. So, you know, like it was
great
on the
flick.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was on the radar.
Yeah.
So this movie, it's the new Pixar, and I was like, I just didn't, I wasn't really that interested. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm like, what is this movie? Like,
yeah.
Within the first 20 minutes, I just remember thinking, this is not like any other Pixar movie I've seen. I just think it's amazing. I think it's an amazing film.
Something that you've often mentioned, Mike, is that you appreciate and that you look for in movies and film is the strength of the visual storytelling.
100%.
And when you can make two characters, when you can make the audience feel so deeply for two characters in a film who barely speak, who only communicate through like bleeps and bloops.
And they're not even human.
They're not even human.
Yeah.
One literally just picks up trash almost the entire movie.
Yeah.
It's actually astounding. Like, it's truly a remarkable
really
feat.
One must imagine Wally is happy. Existentialism for you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that's beautiful.
Like, I wrote down this fact and I found it. The average number of storyboards used on a Pixar film is 75,000, but for this movie it was 125,000.
Wow,
it's a big difference.
Lots of extra visual work.
That's so interesting.
I also was along the same lines. I was thinking that like this movie not easy to make. Like, it's kind of dark. And, like, turning that into a Pixar movie and then also communicating these human emotions through robots.
Yep.
And, like, making it so much more human. And I was even going to say this for Arrival. Like, there's so much communication, like, outside of language, too.
Mm.
And in just, like, the way that they interact with each other. Which is so just brilliant.
Yes.
That's a great point, actually. In both of these movies, there's I've really met this connection as I was looking for sound clips for these two movies. How hard it was to do that, because there's just scenes where there's like maybe it'll be like a 10-minute stretch with maybe four lines of dialogue.
Right. Yeah.
So, and in this case, for the first half of the movie, or 40, 50 minutes, there's barely any dialogue. So
a lot of bleeps and bloops.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is just an incredibly heartfelt movie. I think it's an hour and 30, hour 40 minutes, so it's pretty clean cut. I did want to bring up this quick little tidbit before we cut to commercial break. This movie, I remember being online on those IMDb movie boards,
mm-hmm.
like those message boards, and I remember one of the prevailing theories there. I don't know if there's any relevance to this, but there was a rumor because the 10 10 nominee Best Picture category started about a year and a half after this movie came out,
mm-hmm.
and the rumor was that a lot of people, alongside The Dark Knight, Wall-E was...
Both of them, yeah.
Yeah, Wall-E and The Dark Knight were excluded from the top five Best Picture nominees in 2008, or 2009, I guess.
Yep.
And so it was the rumor that because these two movies got shafted, that's why they started to lend it up, because they realized they just weren't being able to expand to the potential and really recognize the full bodies of work that were coming out.
100%. And actually, when you look at both of those films, not that, I mean, there's been examples of this, I guess, maybe a little bit, but typically Oscar movies were that almost its own genre. Like,
yeah.
Like, no, I mean, they go left and right at certain times, but both of these films represent something that isn't always represented at the Oscars previous to these years, which is animation and I would say big box office slash superhero slash IP, right?
Right.
And, you know, I think by opening up the category, some might say it's a bad thing because it's you're getting too many participation trophies. I can understand that argument.
Sure.
On the other hand, you are opening it up for films like this for years like 07 and 08 where you have, you know, these all-time classic films that aren't being recognized at the Oscars. So, you know, there's pros and cons about it for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyone
want to take a guess as to the director's next film?
I mean, I know, so
I don't know. What did he do after? Or, like, do you mean his next one?
His
like,
next one that he directed.
Immediately after, Andrew Stanton.
Yeah. Not a clue. What did he do?
One of the biggest box office bombs of all time. All of cinema. It's a little trivia. Should we leave it as a cliffhanger?
A little cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Find out when we get back.
Is this a Western?
Kind of, actually. Yeah.
Is this Rango?
No, it is not Rango.
That movie actually did quite well.
No, it is very well. Yeah.
But you'll find out right after these ads. Don't go anywhere. We are in the midst of our top 25 films of the past 25 years. Stick around. We will be right back with more Outside the Frame. You are still tuned in to Outside the Frame, London's only movie talk show.
You left me on a cliffhanger. What was the
I'm
next video?
I have to intro us. We're Outside the Frame, London's only movie talk show. You can catch us on 94.9 at 6 p.m. every Tuesday.
I know.
He's keeping his face alive.
That's Elijah. You're Ryan. I'm Mike. Sam's on the phone.
Yeah, you can call or text 519-661-3600.
Top 25.
We're on streaming now,
right.
You can get us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you go. We're on YouTube
as
well.
This is the type of emotion we needed from him.
Wait, guys, I have like a silly Wally question for you.
Okay, go for it.
If you could put any team or corporation on the moon, which one would you choose?
Now, is this to like get rid of it forever, or is this like just so that if I ever go to the moon, I could have it?
It's like a franchise, like we're franchising out to the moon?
Or can so I never have to see it again?
No, you're franchising out to the moon.
Oh.
Hmm.
I got mine.
Oh, I got mine.
Like if I was going to the moon, I would want this to be there?
Yeah, I got mine very easily.
Yeah.
I don't. What's yours?
Blue Moon beer. The advertising.
That makes a lot of sense.
Kills it. Blue Moon.
I was gonna go with Baby Bell.
Okay. Yeah.
The cheese.
Very nice. I was just gonna say Dairy Queen, because I think it would be fun. They always do the anti-gravity test
now,
on you. So.
Yeah. There you go.
So like just for them to let it go. It's
Sam,
even...
if your question was if I wanted to get rid of something. I know what I would put on the moon right now.
Yeah, what?
Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, let's go, baby! Jason 3!
Stomp on their throats!
What's your answer, Sam?
Oh, I guess like the right answer would be Radio Western.
Nice.
Yeah.
Radio Damn, Western
straight
on the moon.
Franchise out to the moon?
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll broadcast everywhere.
The answer to the question that I asked before the break was John Carter.
Oh, I actually like John Carter.
I think we just talked about it.
Yeah, we just talked about this.
One of the biggest box office bombs, the director of WALL-E directed John Carter. Now,
so did he do stuff after that?
He did Finding Dory. Yeah.
Okay.
And now he's done like some TV shows every so often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was put in director's jail for a little bit, eh?
Not really. Not after Finding Dory. Finding Dory was like their biggest grossing film for a while.
Gajillion dollars.
Yeah. So.
Elijah, what's our next movie?
Our next movie. Oh my God. So we go from the nice, lovely WALL-E to one of the most depraved movies. Depraved comedies of the
so good.
of the 21st century, and of course, I am talking about none other than 2013's The Wolf of Wall Street.
Let me tell you something. There is no nobility in poverty. I have been a rich man and I have been a poor man, and I choose rich every time. Because at least as a rich man, when I have to face my problems, I show up in the back of a limo. Wearing a $2,000 suit and a $40,000 gold watch.
Dude, it's so great.
This movie,
it's so good.
Directed by Martin Scorsese, written by Terrence Winter as an adaptation of the memoir of the same name by Jordan Belfort. This movie's about Jordan Belfort.
It's a so good.
Fairy dust. Matthew McConaughey is so good in this movie. I mean, this movie is about Jordan Belfort. It's his rise and his fall, becoming a very, very, very wealthy stockbroker, and then his eventual downfall, involving crime, corruption in the federal government. This movie has and stars Leonardo DiCaprio, Jonah Hill, Margot Robbie, Matthew McConaughey, Kyle Chandler, Rob Reiner, John Bernthal, John Favreau, Jean Dujardin,
so
Kristen Bellotti, and so many more that I can't even.
What are these sites? Cure cancer? What do they do?
They actually do cancer. That's why they're so expensive.
This is a side thing. But the scene in which Rob Reiner, somebody calls him on a Tuesday night and he starts freaking out.
While he's watching The Equalizer?
I was watching it with my girlfriend and she turned to me and goes, this is what it's going to be like in the future, isn't it?
Yeah.
You yelling at who's calling on a Tuesday night.
But as soon as you pick up the phone, it's, hello.
Like just hey, hello, how you doing?
And then in some weird accent too, like, oh, dude. Yeah, this movie rips.
This
it
movie
rips
made
very hard.
$116 million domestically, $407 million worldwide. It's the highest grossing Scorsese movie. It was nominated for 5 Oscars, including Best Picture.
He should have won and said, the Revenant is a makeup Oscar for this movie.
Genuinely, yes. I 100% agree. And we will get into that in a second. So let's start this off. Why is this number 13? What can we say? There's so much we can say about this movie.
Obviously, we needed to do a Scorsese. A couple more obvious picks, maybe The Departed, because he wins the first. Yeah. He has to wait 30 plus years to win his first directing Oscar. So you could do that. You could do a few other films maybe that are on his list in the 2000s,
like,
right?
Hugo.
Heck yeah.
That is the thing.
Yep.
And that's the thing is we all have, I think, a different personal favorite from this century of Scorsese.
If you were Dalton, if he was here, he would pick Silence.
Everyone, I do love that movie.
Everyone.
I think I would pick The Aviator.
I love The Aviator. I think it's very underrated.
Let's not get off topic. We'll talk about it later.
The Silence is, don't get me started on that movie. But anyway, it also... That's the film that broke up Andrew Garfield and
Emma Stone.
Yeah. Silence?
Yeah.
He fasted too much?
Well, not just fasted. He was like, he actually became like a monk, like, and got like ordained as like a minister and all this. I mean, he went full Daniel Day on it. Yeah. Yeah.
It's fun.
And Emma Stone was like, yeah, dude, I'm not.
You don't need
me.
To do that,
yeah.
bro. Yeah.
yeah.
Watch
yeah.
me win 2 Oscars not doing that.
Yeah. I'll
he went that method, but yeah. he's a Portuguese character speaking. In English the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I mean, how method really is
I mean,
that?
He wasn't going to change the script.
Yeah. However, Wolf of Wall Street. What the preempt there is that, you know, we got to get a Scorsese on here, obviously. This movie, I think, is one of Scorsese's most rewatchable films.
Oh, for sure.
I think it's also in the category of you're watching it wrong.
This was my pick for the episode we did for
yes.
that. Yeah.
So in the same category as, like, Fight Club, for example. Mm-hmm. If you're using this movie to glorify or to hold up, you know, hey, this is a way to live your life, or this is like morally,
this is like an ideal version of what I want to accomplish
right.
in life. Yeah,
you're watching the movie wrong.
For sure,
that's not what the movie's about. I think it does all the things that Scorsese loves in his movies, which is the rise and fall of a character. We see this in films like Goodfellas. It has a very Goodfellas type of. Arc, I guess you could say. It's just what's great about this movie is that they finance, like, Leo gets this movie financed, which is a whole other story, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Because basically it's real life mirroring art. Like, the guy that financed it got into a bunch of trouble. Because of weird dealings, financial dealings. Anyways, but they get the movie financed outside of the studio system, which means that they basically, Scorsese gets to go in gloves off and they just put everything on screen.
So good.
One of the great, there's there's many things that I would love to see in this quote unquote Hollywood vault, and one of which is the like 6 or 7 hour cut of this movie. What did he cut out?
Right.
I would watch a 6 hour version of this movie.
I would too.
It is the most like needle drops. It is the most like he uses yes. like all the Scorsese fixins. It's the narration. It's the here's this character. We're gonna go back and tell the story. We're gonna catch you up. It's depravity.
Criminal organizations at work.
Right. It's
criminal activity. I guess.
Essentially, an X-rated movie for all intents and purposes.
There is a penis
also,
in it.
Yeah, there is.
There's sure many is. Things in it, actually.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, it gives us an incredible gift, and that is the person that is named Margot Robbie, which is, that's just a consequence of this movie, but it's a great one. And you also get Jonah Hill in a role like he could be perfect in this movie.
Could be his best role.
He took a pay cut for. Of course. They didn't really want him. And he was like, I'll do it for $60,000.
Yeah,
and they were like, we can't beat that.
Yeah, we can't beat that. And they get his name. I mean, this is a couple of years, 6 years after Superbad. He just did Moneyball.
That's right.
And was nominated. So he's on a different path now. This movie is just, performance is incredible. The movie itself is incredible. You can pick this movie up anywhere, like if it's on TV or wherever. You could pick it up halfway through.
I have done that.
It's an amazing. It's what I would call, this, in summation, I would call this movie a full meal. This is a full meal movie. You are gonna laugh. You are gonna cry. It has everything in it: violence, sex, nudity, language, drugs,
violence
again.
Sex
again.
More drugs.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible.
It's one of those movies that I feel operates like it's everybody operating on full blast.
It literally is on.
Everybody
like,
is on the peak of their talents.
You can't get more Scorsese than this movie.
Right. Like, and Leonardo DiCaprio, you mentioned it earlier, genuinely should have won the Oscar for this role. He's absolutely incredible. And I think that when people look at Leonardo DiCaprio just playing a very loose, very egotistical guy, I think they kind of take for granted how great of an actor he is and how much he's actually giving to a movie like this and the nuance that comes with a role like this, especially because he is a little quieter in the beginning of the movie when he's just kind of like coming up.
Yeah.
And how fully depraved.
Dude, Spike Jonze in this movie, that scene.
That's right.
Spike Jonze where he's like, you know, he sells it for the first time. He's like, these guys looked at me like I discovered fire. And like, he just sells like, you know, this. And that scene is incredible. Spike Jonze is incredible in that role.
Yeah.
He's so funny. It's just all these little pieces. The gang, like the, like Scorsese's gang that he gets together are these cast of characters that you're just like, these are like the worst human beings, but you also like they're hilarious and sad and funny, and
it might be the best cast movie on this entire list.
It's so well
like
cast.
Every single character is so well cast. Every single actor is perfectly casted in the role that they're doing. Bringing Rob Reiner in to play Werner Belford's dad is genius.
Yes.
Sam, do you like this movie?
Brilliant. Jam-packed. I like what you're saying about the character and like doing all the wrong things to deal with things. And I have a note that I remembered that was like, we like his character, and it's not because we're sympathizing with him because there's a backstory. It's like we like him because it's just like he's so big.
That's right. Yeah.
And a lot of that is because of Leo, right? Like, if they cast anybody else in this, maybe it doesn't go over as well.
No.
But Leo is such a charming and charismatic and magnetic performer.
Oh, really?
It's like all of the great Scorsese flicks where you live vicariously through the character through the first half of the movie, and then things begin to flip
and
on
you're
their
like
heads.
I don't want this guy's life. Like,
and then you go,
this movie, I think
it's the extremes though.
It's like, the extremes.
Yeah. And I think this movie does a really good job at kind of encapsulating a lot of like what is celebrated, especially like from an individualism standpoint of what is celebrated in North America.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean,
step
it's
on
greed.
Anybody. It's greed. Yeah, it's corruption.
Greed.
Yeah. It's,
greed
it's,
is good. I mean, they say it. It's like Wall Street, like the actual movie Wall Street. I mean, it's the same idea of like the influx of the 80s, Wall Street, all of that stuff. And it was greed is good. Get the thing while you can.
By any means necessary.
By any means necessary.
It's the genius shot of it at the end of Belfort, you know, playing tennis in the prison, and then it cuts to the FBI agent taking the subway
taking
to
the
work.
Subway.
Yeah.
It's like his life is still better, technically, for on paper than the FBI agent. You know, this movie too, I love the way that's shot, that the camera just has so much energy. Everything has energy in this movie. It's crazy that this movie, one of the reasons why I love it so much, it's one of my favorite Scorsese movies, is because it feels like a young person directed it.
He was 70 when he made this movie.
It's crazy a 70-year-old directed this.
Yeah, this is not this is like someone that is operating on a in a different way. Like, you
but
know,
also he knows.
He knows all, course he knows.
From his escapades back in his days, Scorsese knows. He's got the experience.
Yeah, yeah. Taxi Driver doesn't get made without cocaine, by the way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, that movie just does not get made.
Yeah.
And that is real. Because that movie was made by cocaine, essentially. But, yeah, he had his own struggles and understands, you know. But, the way that he treats the camera is just, and just everything has just so much energy. It's just like this, you know. And he jam packs so much into this movie too, even though the run. But the thing is, like, this is the kind of movie I want to be longer. Like, I'm
100%.
Serious. Like, you're like, oh yeah, I forgot that. Like the scene with Spike Jonze, you forget that scene's in there, and then it comes. You're like, this is brilliant. Like, this scene's amazing. Like the whole scene of them on the boat. You know, the boat.
Oh,
scene.
Him and Kyle Chandler going
just
back and forth.
Just a little chop. It's just a little chop, and it's like,
that one,
right?
Oh, that one.
And it's like that whole scene. You're like, oh yeah, I forgot that was whole thing in the movie.
I refuse to die sober.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get me those lewds.
Yeah. My older sister always sends me the clip of John Bernthal with the weights.
Oh yeah.
Mom, we have a chicken or what?
This movie, it's an all-timer.
This movie has it all. Yeah. Truly something for everyone. Any final thoughts before we move on to our number 12 pick? That's
just
silence. Silence across the board. Yes. Okay.
Steve Madden.
Both Quaalude scenes are like all timers for me.
All timers, dude.
Okay. Moving on to our number 12 pick. We're somehow back to a family friendly movie.
Oh yeah.
Thought we were done with animation with WALL-E, you are sadly mistaken, because our number 12 pick is none other than Spirited Away.
You have to hold your breath while we cross the bridge. Even the tiniest breath will break the spell, and then everyone will see you.
Welcome back.
I'm scared.
Now just stay calm.
Welcome, welcome. Always nice to see you. Welcome back. Welcome, welcome.
I'm back from my mission.
Welcome. Welcome back, Master Haku.
Take a deep breath. Hold it.
Spirited Away, 2001. It was directed and written by Hayao Miyazaki. It stars Rumi Hiragi, Miyu Irino, as the main characters in the original version anyways, and then in the dubbed version, which you've just heard, DeVay Chase and Jason Marsden. This story follows a ordinary 10-year-old girl, Chihiro, as she arrives at the deserted theme park that turns out to be a realm of gods and spirits. After an overeating incident leads her parents to turn into literal pigs, Chihiro must work in a bathhouse that serves otherworldly customers in order to survive and find a way to return home. What a wild...
Yeah, it's wild. It's
crazy. That's a wild synopsis.
I mean, speaking of animation giants, obviously you have Pixar that we have earlier on the list. This is another animation giant.
Yes, yes. Studio Ghibli, Miyazaki is just one of the greatest to ever do it. And this movie is arguably his magnum opus.
Probably there's a bunch of others that we could put on this list again. Like, there's, you know, he's made a bunch
Howl's
of movies
Moving
in this
Castle.
List. That's right.
Yeah. The Boy and the Heron.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But again, I guess we felt as a group that we should probably have a Miyazaki movie on this,
for
on this
sure.
list.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. This movie did win one Oscar, and that was for Best Animated Feature. The Boy and the Heron also notably won Best Animated Feature. But this was his first Oscar. And this movie made $13 million domestically and $358 million domestically. For two decades straight, it was Japan's highest grossing movie of all time.
Ever.
Ever.
Wow.
And so, Sam, why is this movie, I'll pass things over to you first, why is this movie on our top 25 films list?
Oh, okay. So, there's so many things I want to say, first of all, I think that I came across this movie or this style of animation a little bit later, and I was so used to the Pixar style. Mm-hmm. And so, for one, it's just a completely different, like, completely different ballgame with the animation and, like, the way that things are thought of and the way that they go about things in this movie, I think is brilliant. And just every character is just so different from the regular animation styles that, that we're also used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, it's about Chihiro, which is a super cool character. It starts out with her being, like, kind of annoying.
Yeah, she's a spoiled brat.
Yeah. And then we go through it, and then it's, like, her connections with people and her learning how to make a place home or learn and navigate a place. Kind of, you see more of this gentle, kind side of her, and you really grow to like her a lot. And I have a note here, because that kind of reminded me of Paddington a bit, and I was like, this is probably why Elijah likes so much, because every single character in this is like, you're so kind, let me give you a gift. And like, that's literally Paddington, and everything he does is I'm so kind.
Yeah, maybe minus like the woman who runs the bathhouse. She was not nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. There are a lot of not nice characters too. But also I think that a really big theme in all of the movies that we've discussed today, like especially Wall-E, Wolf of Wall Street, and this movie is greed. And
you're right.
A really big, like there's so many characters that are just working away, losing themselves, like only interested in their self-interest and continuing to consume. And there's so much greed in this movie, like especially with her parents turning into pigs.
Yeah.
And so we see so much of that theme too.
100%.
Those are my biggest notes, but it also, there's so much friendship, and it's just beautiful with the other characters too.
It is a really beautiful movie. I love that you brought up the themes of, it obviously has it's very digestible themes for a kid's movie. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of how Miyazaki works.
But both those films, like, Spirited Away and Wall-E, though kids' films, sure, are play older.
100%. Right?
And it is interesting that it can mean, like, this is what's so great about film, and one of the many things, but is that movies will mean different things to you in different times of your life. And
and
I think Wall-E is one of those films, Spirited Away is one of those films. You know, it's not the hammer fist that is Wolf of Wall Street, where it's like, this is what the movie's about necessarily. Yeah. Like, it has the Wall-E's one of those things you can see when you're 10 and be like, oh, that was awesome, and then see when you're 20 and see something different, see when you're 30.
Yeah.
And same with Spirited Away.
We see movies not as they are, but as we are.
Ooh, is that another quote?
Another Sam quote for the day.
Is that a Sam quote?
Heck yeah.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah, when you're a kid and you're watching this movie, it probably looks pretty good, and it does. It's hand-drawn beautifully. But then you also realize, when you grow older and you see how it's talking about the disillusionment of growing up and becoming mature, which obviously a lot of Miyazaki films are about growing up and facing nostalgia of like what it means and how shocking it is. It's like almost entering a different world to grow up into an adult and get hit with all these responsibilities. But I think this is probably the best example he has of this. It's just a beautiful movie. And I do have to move on, because we still have one more movie to get to on our list, and we have 5 minutes to get through it.
They knew, and they let it happen.
We got law. This is it.
No, this is law covering for one priest. There's another 90 out there.
Yeah, and we'll print that story when we get it, but we got to go with this now.
Oh, No, I'm not going to rush the story, Mike.
We don't have a choice, Robbie. If we don't rush to print, somebody else is going to find these letters and butcher the story. Joe Quimby from the Herald was at the freaking courthouse.
Mike.
What? Why are we hesitating? Barron told us to get law. This is law.
Barron told us to get the system. We need the full scope. That's the only thing that will put an end to this.
Then let's take it up to Ben. Let him decide.
We'll take it to Ben when I say it's time.
It's time, Robbie. It's time. They knew, and they let it happen. Two kids. Okay? It could have been you. It could have been me. It could have been any of us. We got to nail these scumbags. We got to show people that nobody can get away with this. Not a priest or a cardinal or a freaking pope.
Usually I do a little rundown, obviously, of the movie, but I'm trying to speed through this. Of course, this is the 2015 movie Spotlight.
Oh, dude, this movie rules. Spotlight. That made me just want to watch the movie, dude. Like, I might have to go and watch it after.
No, I might have to as well. I'm gonna definitely after the Jays game tonight.
Yeah.
Why is Spotlight number 11 on our top 25 this is films? I'll let you two talk on
this.
This
is an important film to the show, I think. It's one of the ones that, if I'm not mistaken, this is like a unanimous film among the four of us.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
That we all think is not only great, but one of the a classic, a rewatchable, all of those things. I think it's also fitting, Ryan, this being your last show.
Yeah, I know.
And you brought this up, and I think it's great if you want to talk about it, because this is a journalism film.
Yes.
It's also one of my favorite genres of film that I've dubbed guys going through files.
Guys going through files.
And in this case, people going through files.
Shout out Rachel McAdams.
I love when people go through files, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it's about one of the biggest groundbreaking stories that have happened in the 21st century, which is the Boston sexual assault priest scandal, which kind of shook the whole world internationally when it happened. Obviously, follows the Spotlight division at the Boston Globe, which is their investigative journalism division. What makes this such a great movie, such a great journalism movie, is the fact that its style is very specific in the sense that some people would say it has an absence of style, but it's very intentional in what they're doing.
It is.
And it's showing you how grueling, how slow, how methodical and how boring it takes to get one of these stories together. It's a lot of guys looking through files, knocking on doors. It is not flashy, it is not exciting, but it is very, very hard and very important work that needs to be done.
Absolutely.
Is this like, obviously the real life implications of what they're exposing is like one of the worst things ever.
One of the absolute worst.
However,
things ever.
If you remove that part of it, is like as a journalist, is that like kind of your dream is to like break something
that big
on that kind of level? Doesn't have to be
absolutely.
Like that dark, but
yeah, absolutely. Something. I mean, you're always trying. I mean, and that's the other thing that you hear.
Is that what you're is that what you're striving towards? Is something?
Yeah.
Like,
well, yeah, you're always trying to because you know what do you. I mean, we're talking about growing up, maturing and stuff. What you begin to realize is that as an adult is that nobody really knows what's going on.
Yeah, 100%.
Nobody really knows the things happening around them. And so there's a sense that if you're a journalist and you can break a really big story like that, if you could just deliver something that gives people something to look out for, gives people clarity of something, a part of their lives that maybe we should have been looking towards and we weren't looking towards it.
And then being able to not totally fix it, but react to it, and actually like and expose something like that so that it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen.
Right.
Continue happening.
That's right. Yeah. I think you know this movie is obviously taking you know its cues from things like All the President's Men, which again it's a film that all four of us really love. Again, another
guys looking through files.
But again, that film has a similar style in that it is long. They're talking to people. They're on phone calls.
There's a lot of takes that just meander at some point.
That's right.
Similar to investigating a story. Each conversation that they have is just another piece
added to the puzzle,
that continues to build until you're starting to see the bigger picture just as soon as they are.
I will say, too, and I want to hear what Sam has to say as well on this film, but I do have to say the first time that I saw this movie, okay, there's a moment where And it kind of comes out of nowhere. It's one of my favorite moments in the movie. Because okay. there's like some flashy stuff. We played one of them, the Mark mm-hmm. Ruffalo piece.
Right, right, right.
There's this moment where one of the team figures out that one of the houses is like next, like in his neighborhood. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he like goes outside and like looks at it. And the way that's scarier than most horror films of the last 15 years.
Yes.
That sequence.
Oh my gosh.
And it's not shot in a way that like a horror film is shot. It's like using the information that we, the audience, have now, we now know what's going on and happening and blah, blah, blah. And then to like bring it into a character that we care about in the team. And then they figure out that this is like, it's not happening, you know, in another state or in another city or in another country, but literally on the street that he's living, mm-hmm. right? And yeah. and it's such a terrifying moment, mm-hmm. and I just love the way that, and that's the kind of thing that this film like does, where it like, see, if they didn't have all those small moments, none of that sequence means absolutely nothing. You're like, it's a guy looking at a house, like
yeah.
that's nothing, right? So anyway, Sam, what do you have any thoughts on this movie? I know you
yeah,
like this film as well.
I completely agree. I think you guys said it really well. It leans so heavy on the story, and it doesn't focus as much on all the other production elements, I guess you could say. Just, you know, it's just story heavy. Like, we're not thinking about the score or the this or the that. It's just,
I love the story.
And
so
I think
simple.
That
shows
so simple. How much weight it has.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you guys.
It's also really well cast. Like,
yes.
you got Ruffalo, right? You got Keaton.
Yep.
Right? You got Tucci.
Yep.
Right?
You got McAdams.
Tucci.
You
Tucci
got
gang.
Billy Crudup.
What's the guy from Mad Men?
John Slattery. Slattery?
You got,
he's in it.
What's his...
Liev Schreiber?
Liev Schreiber,
right?
Yeah, who's awesome.
Oh, yep. Everybody does their part fantastic in this.
And he does his acting, like, when he talks just down like this. And
oh, yeah.
So, like,
oh, yeah.
One note very much like this. Which, again...
Works for his character.
In this movie is amazing, right?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's cast perfectly. Rachel McAdams, unbelievable.
Yeah.
She's so great.
Shout out London
Girl.
She's so
great in
yes.
this movie.
Really? Yes. Yeah. Very reserved, but like she's holding a lot behind her eyes. There's a lot.
It's very hard for, and this is post Notebook, right? Where you look at her as a regular person. Now, she's
yes.
not a regular person. Okay. She's a movie star. I almost swore there. she's a freaking movie star. Okay. And she looks like a movie star. And she acts like a movie. I mean, she's in these big movies, whatever. But in this movie, she's just a regular person.
She really
right?
embodies the character.
And,
yeah.
And she's not. No one's doing any like super heavy lifting. As like, it's not a Leo performance in Wolf
right.
of Wall Street where he's literally
yeah.
carrying the whole movie. Right.
No.
Everyone
yeah,
has
yeah.
their little piece.
But it's a good ensemble piece.
It's amazing.
And they all
ensemble.
Work together
yeah.
well
because as many.
What's Sam yelling about? What are you yelling about?
I'm just agreeing. Like, there's no insane characters or like what. It's
no.
Just, again, story.
Story.
You know, I firmly believe that journalism is ultimately a team sport as well.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah,
it
this
is.
Also has one of the like. I don't want to say it's my favorite moment because that's a weird way to say it in a
yeah.
movie like this, but one that always sticks with me is the end credits.
And oh, the end credits are amazing.
A gut punch of end credits. And
because
like,
it's like,
the
it,
sustain,
doesn't,
it
keeps going. Dude.
Going.
Yeah.
And the way that the list
yeah.
just keeps on going, and every time you think it's going to end, it goes a little bit longer, and it's...
On the same note, okay... I would all edit because it's a weird thing to say about this film. This this film is so rewatchable, and it shouldn't be.
Right.
Yeah, it shouldn't be with the subject matter.
The
that
subject
it's about.
Matter and what it's and like and the way the style. But like and it to me, it's 100% a fall movie. Like every time it's fall, I find myself rewatching this film. Mm. Like I've rewatched this film so many times, dude, and it's so good, and it still hits. And yeah, it's an incredible film.
One of the few
it's
films on our list
movie.
That actually won Best Picture.
It did,
And one of the few, and like, I wouldn't say one of the few movies, but one of the most deserving.
It is very deserving.
Oh, yes.
It is a very deserving movie. Yeah. And that is
simple,
why
simple title to Spotlight. Like, you know,
Spotlight.
Yep.
You know
what it's about.
Yeah.
It's about the team.
Yeah.
And it's about their discovery.
Keaton is so good.
Elijah, to what you were saying about the end credits, I saw so much stuff online of people saying that they saw it in theaters and it was just silence.
Oh, you could hear a pin drop for sure.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that all of those reasons is why this movie is number 11 on our top 25 films of the past 25 years.
What a way to end it.
What
Bye,
a way
Ryan.
To end it.
See ya.
Yeah. Whoa.
Somebody did text in, though, to say, since it's Ryan's last day, what would be his personal top five best movies?
Of the 20?
No,
of,
I just think of like what are your five? To end us off, what are your five?
I can give
movies.
You. I think I've talked about my Letterboxd top four.
Yeah, I mean, add a fifth one in there.
You have to have. I mean, you got to do what Lawrence probably is in there.
Lawrence is probably. You know, I'll throw out my four and I'll put Lawrence in there. So okay. Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah.
The Insider. Another great journalism movie.
Yeah.
Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
The Fisher King.
Yeah.
And The Big Lebowski has always been.
Yeah.
My favorite.
Those are all like we've kind of talked about a bunch of those movies in different ways over the last couple of years and.
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas might be up there, too.
Yeah, it's great. Spotlight would be up there.
Spotlight would be up there.
All the President's Men.
Brazil might be up there. I'm a big Terry Gilliam fan, so.
Yeah.
Well, Ryan, this is it.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you so much for all your contributions. We're going to miss you, man.
It's been a pleasure, and it's been really fun. I've had a hell of a time.
Yeah, and you can still hear and see Ryan in person at Trivia Nights October 21st is our next one.
Hell, you might see me around town. You might bump into me. You might see me on the street. You never know.
Every time you tell him something, make sure it's off the record.
It's got to be off the record.
Yes.
Now.
Yeah, it's got to be off the record.
Thanks, Sam.
So, thank you, Sam. I am going to, before we go, I'm going to quickly recap. At number 15, we had Arrival. At number 14, we had WALL-E. At number 13, we had The Wolf of Wall Street. At number 12, we had Spirited Away. And number 11 went to Spotlight. Thank you all for tuning in to Outside the Frame, London's only movie talk show.
You know what number 10 is going to be? The Jays beating
the
Yankees in Yankee Stadium tonight.
Season 3.
My name's Elijah.
And I'm Ryan.
I'm Mike.
I'm Sam.
And we are Outside the Frame. We will see you all next week. Take care of yourselves until then.